A couple of surprises at the end of the week last week. US jobs data on Friday was a lot weaker than expected, and the same for the services ISM. So a weaker jobs market, a slowing economy. Obviously, that raises hopes of cuts sooner. Is that how markets have been seeing it? And more central banks this week, the RBA and the Bank of England to come. And here's a question. With elections on in many parts of the world, can we assume government spending is going to stay high? And is that part of what's keeping inflation from coming down as fast as we'd like? It's Monday. It's the 6th of May, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar fell 0.25% on Friday and down 0.8% over the week. Against that, a 0.7% rise in the Aussie dollar on Friday, up to 66.1 US cents. That's at 1.2% through the week. The share market had a good week, even with quite a dip in the middle of the week, but bouncing back Thursday and Friday. So 2% up for the NASDAQ, for example, on Friday. The S&P was up 1.3% on the day, 1.2% for the Dow, plus 0.6% for the DAX and the Euro Stoxx 50, and the same for the ASX 200 on Friday as well. So the direction was generally up. And bond yields in the US falling the last few days of the week. 10-year treasuries fell 18 basis points on the last few days, finishing at 4.52%. German 10-year bunds and Aussie 10-years both down just 9 basis points, falling in just the last 2 days of the week. And falls in oil prices across the week last week as well. WTI, for example, fell 6.9%, finishing up at $78 a barrel. Brent down 6.5% over the week to just under $83 a barrel. But let's start with the big number at the end of the week last week, non-farm payrolls from the United States. Here's NAB's Ken Crompton in Sydney. So the numbers, Ken, added to the workforce much less than expected. The unemployment rate rose to 3.9%, so jobs are getting a bit harder. And we saw that, didn't we, in the job openings earlier in the week as well, in the JOLTS numbers. So this will come as welcome news, not to most people, but to the Fed. Because hopefully it's going to keep wage inflation down.
Yeah, good morning, Phil. That 175,000 gain in employment, non-farm payrolls in the US in April, running well under expectations. And as you've said, also came with the unemployment rate ticking up. I mean, marginally. This is one of our favourite second decimal point movements. I think the actual increase in the unemployment rate was 0.03%, but just enough to tick it over that rounding threshold to 3.9. So I think I'd put it in the category of a print that is going to be of comfort to the Fed. Just it does show that the labour force is cooling a tiny bit around the edges, but still not weakening rapidly. This is coming off the back of an extended run of above expectations gains. I think this is the weakest in 6 months. I think net revisions of about 22,000 to the previous couple of months. But so certainly a number that quite rightly has taken some of the more panicky sort of pricing of rate hikes or sort of risk of rate hikes out of the US interest rate curve, but not done too much damage in net by the time we got to the end of the movements for the night.
Well, it looks like it's raised the chance of a September cut a little bit, hasn't it? So anything before that is looking very unlikely, but I'm seeing September's gone from a 60% chance to 75% chance.
Yes, that's about right. About 22 points priced for September now, as I said, and that's where NAB has got our forecast for a Fed cut. And this number sort of certainly feels in line with that sort of outcome. If you look at the pricing for the full year for the Fed, it's down about 45 basis points. So nearly two cuts they're priced in over the course of the year. And if you go back to the early last week, I think that was about 25 basis points. They're barely pricing one. Now I'm pricing closer to two. So certainly hasn't been huge sort of overdone moves, I'd argue. And if you look at where the longer end of the curve has landed, 10-year treasury is around 4.5%. That still feels like a number that's pretty fair, even in an environment where the unemployment rate is showing a little bit of slowing. So,
and I imagine the services ISM had a bit to do with this as well, because that came in from 51.4, 53 was expected, but it actually fell to 49.4. So the services sector, obviously the biggest sector, into contraction territory now.
Yeah, certainly a bit of a big surprise to the market expectations on that ISM number. And what we've started to, I think the things that that mostly drove that decline in the overall headline index was actually business conditions. And I mean, sort of teasing into the detail, a couple of other things that stood out and got the market a little bit concerned was a big rebound in prices paid. We heard Fed Chair Powell last week looking for the well, he said he hadn't found either the stag or the flation yet. You know, you can sort of look at some of these price measures within a lot of these business surveys. You know, I'm not sort of trying to overdo the you know, the prices numbers there, but they are at the very least they're flat and in many occasions rising. Now the ISM in particular, you had a surprise drop in this measure back in March. So to some extent, this was just a bit of a rebound, but still, back. I think we're
from 53.4 to 59.2. That sounds like, you know,
exactly. That
sounds like the flation, and the fact that the services is contracting sounds like the stag. So you know, I'm not sure what he's talking about.
Yep. So yeah, exactly. New orders slowing off. So I think deliveries moving up in pace. So people are working through the backlog of work. So yeah, arguably a little bit of a tick for the stagflation outcome maybe, but hardly sort of perilous sort of numbers. And I mean, we did get the final PMI read on Friday night as well. You know, different survey, probably certainly considered the less rigorous of the two for the US, but that did decline a little bit from the flash read, but that's still sort of slightly in expansionary territory. So in terms of what this did to market sentiment on Friday, between those two data prints, the softening payrolls and ISM, a pretty subdued sort of impact on the rate outlook. Equities don't mind that.
No, absolutely not. No, they're racing ahead towards the end of last week, weren't they? So Austin Goolsbee as well from the Fed was saying at the end of the week they've got to find a better way of communicating their economic thinking. So they do the dot plots, but they need to, you know, provide more thinking about the economic outcomes that are influencing their policy. In other words, demystifying the Fed. Which would be good, but then he didn't give any hints at all about what he saw as the outlook for interest rates. So that would have been quite helpful. If you're going to do that, why not start now?
Yeah, and I mean, he did sort of hint at even moving to a regime where there'd be sort of specific macroeconomic guidelines or sort of guideposts that would point to certain levels of policy, which I think is a somewhat dangerous path to go down. I mean, obviously, we've seen what happened in Australia when you had Governor Lowe link or sort of make public links explicitly between economic forecasts and rate outcomes. Sort of providing explicit rules-based guidance like that. You know, sure, you can argue that's a tick for transparency, but it can also bind you up when you actually get there if the nature of what's taking you to a certain place isn't quite what you expected. So,
it ignores the complexity, doesn't it? Really?
Yes. I mean, maybe that's just... a sort of pseudo economist here, sort of seeking a bit of a cop out, not being held accountable to fundamentals. But that would be something that I would that I would caution against with that sort of explicit approach.
You're there
approach.
Saying, "Hang on, what? Take away our wriggle room? No, we're not going to allow that." not that that's the way economists operate. Of course, closer to home, Australian home loans in March. Is this the fear of missing out factor that seems to be at large? So a 2.8% lift in home loans in March, up from 1.5% the month before. Investment lending is up 3.8%. First home buyers, this is month on month, up 4.4%. And yet house prices, crazily expensive, but people still borrowing to buy a house. And I mean, part of it obviously is rents are so high, so it's becoming more worthwhile buying a house. But you've got to have the money to do it.
Obviously, as expectations of RBA interest rate changes have sort of ebbed and flowed through the market over the past few months, that has certainly sort of changed the attitude at the margin of those who may have been waiting to buy a house or deciding whether whether FOMO is finally going to get them and that sort of thing. But you sort of have the undercurrent as well of population growth or household formation versus supply. That maths is still incredibly out of balance.
And it's been a long-term problem for Australia, and it's taking a long, long time to get it fixed, isn't it? A quiet start to the week. The Caging Services PMI is the main number from China. It's been soft, but... it's always been an expansion territory. That's been over since the November 22. Anyway, it's been over 50. But are we expecting more of an uptick this time? It was 52.7 last time. And you know, how important is it for us to see a growth in their services? I mean, I would have thought we'd really want to see a growth in manufacturing because that means that there's more exports coming out of China, whereas services presumably just shows that their domestic economy is growing, which will benefit from in terms of export earnings. But not as significant, I wouldn't have thought, as seeing manufacturing going up.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly the long-fabled sort of Chinese economic rebalancing towards domestic consumption is still, you know, it's still hard to see whether there's been dramatic firm progress on that, but it still seems to be a subtle goal of some kind in the background. I mean, in terms of today's data, yeah, that Kaisen PMI number expected to drop a little bit, but still remain 52.5, so pretty solidly, expansive. And that's been a little bit above the official version for quite a while. Obviously, the advantage of the Kaisen survey being a broader set of data, so it probably does indicate that with this remaining a bit more expansionary, then sort of does indicate sort of relatively effusive positive, somewhat positive sentiment throughout the Chinese economy. So you know, we are seeing some sort of housing market reforms and those sort of things, which would be helping to boost domestic sentiments. This will be not a huge sort of earth-shattering data print, but just another sort of interesting point to keep in mind along the
fairly
way.
Fairly quiet for the rest of the day. It does get a bit busier during the week. We've got the RBA tomorrow, obviously, with the press conference as well, always a press conference. So on hold is what we're expecting. Till when, obviously, is the question. And I guess it makes it a bit more interesting having a press conference. So, you know, at least this was something we can take out, even if things are kept on hold.
Yeah, RBA, on hold. I mean, and the interesting bit will be to what extent the rebound in some of the data since their last meeting is acknowledged. There was maybe a little bit of a sense in their previous, in the communications around the March meeting, that the jump in the unemployment rate above 4% had them a tiny bit concerned. Now, they, like everyone, would have expected a fairly significant payback from that as we got past the seasonal issues that seemed to be afflicting January and February. But then possibly they've been a little bit surprised by just how much payback there was. So I'd be interested to see how they acknowledge the strength of the labour market compared to their sort of current forecasts for this quarter. Similarly, they're going to have to whether there's any change in their broader tone around policy tightening. Quite famously, they moved to a more explicitly neutral bias back in March. Like I just mentioned, the change in unemployment, but you add to that the surprisingly strong Q1 CPI print that we've had in the interim as well. Do they need to sort of adjust the policy mix a bit? Now, I guess one thing that's going to help them is when they are formulating these forecasts for sort of Q2 and beyond, because we do get an S&P with a full updated forecast. One thing that is going to help them is that generally they assume a market implied rate track for the cash rate. And one thing that they're going to find in there now is that depending exactly when you did your snapshots and run your models, you've possibly got sort of a decent amount of rate hikes in there, as opposed to when you did these forecasts back in February, when you were facing down a pretty impressively inverted yield curve, at least at the front end. So, in fact, we're going into tomorrow's meeting with, as of Friday afternoon, may have changed after the US data over the weekend, but we have nearly one basis point of a hike priced for tomorrow. And that's actually the first time we've carried a hike into RBA pricing that's bigger than what is expected to be delivered since March 2022, interestingly. So the market's got a tiny chance there that they might do a bit.
One basis point. Right. Okay. And they're not going to do that. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? So a quieter day in the UK as well today, because it's a bank holiday over there, but the Bank of England meeting on Thursday. August, I think, seems like the likely time for a cut there now, doesn't it?
Yeah, that seems to be where pricing is gravitating around. I think the most interesting potential point this week will be, once again, as with the RBA, the tone of the statement. We're sitting on an 8-1 baseline for votes for change versus cuts. So I'm interested to see whether anyone else sort of jumps into the dovish camp. We're not expecting to, but that may be give a clue that they may be willing to move a bit faster, but it's likely to be 8-1 and unchanged and a fairly steady report.
Yeah, and look, next week it's the federal budget in Australia, but we get state budgets before then. So, what's your interest in the state budgets? I guess you'll just be looking to see what the spending's likely to be and what sort of bond issuance, will you?
Yeah, primarily on the bond issuance side will be of most interest to our clients. But, I mean, more broadly, particularly the interest is in state government infrastructure spending, which has been enormous over the past sort of five to seven years. States are showing a near insatiable appetite for adding large projects to their pipelines. And there's plenty of questions being asked about the influence of this on skilled trades demand being soaked up by these big projects and the flow and impact that's having on, for example, labour costs for household construction and those sort of things. So that investment pipeline will be interesting. Victoria is the first state to release a budget. That's tomorrow. obviously they're sort of infamous for large infrastructure projects and have their sort of state's debt tracking from sub $30 billion not too long ago to well over 220 in the forward. So that'll be interesting. Western Australia, the opposite end of the spectrum, they're out on Thursday, I think, and they're sort of the last bastion of, I guess, sort of relatively traditional state fiscal conservatism in the country, where their sort of net borrowing has been relatively modest, and they've been helped by significant gains in iron ore over the time. So it'd be interesting to see just where the balance lands, how much they continue to spend, what sort of deficits they're going to continue to put out there.
Well, I mean, government spending is going to be an interesting thing this year overall, isn't it, all around the world, particularly when you start looking at government budgets, federal budgets or national budgets, because, you know, we've got so many elections being held, and which countries are going to want to cut spending when they've got an election happening. But then if they keep on spending, what's the inflation impact of that? Interestingly, Chris Richardson, formerly of Access Economics and Deloitte, he's running his own business these days, I think. He says, he reckons, and the principal, Sam, whether the numbers are exact or not, I don't know, but he says for every $7 billion extra in spending, the RBA is going to have to add another rate rise of 0.25%. That's something perhaps we can discuss in future editions of the podcast, but we'll leave it there for now. Good to talk. Catch you soon, Ken.
Thanks, Phil.
And that's the Morning Call for this Monday morning. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Enjoy Monday. We'll be back again tomorrow morning. I'll see you then. Thanks for listening in.